Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If these are our values, then ask yourself, should people of faith shop at Walmart this holiday season? When Walmart repeatedly broke child labor laws, is being sued by 1.5 million women for discrimination, and over 600,000 Walmart workers and their families have no company health care. If these are Walmart's values, should people of faith shop at Walmart? Should you?
An anti-Walmart website called Wake Up Walmart has produced a TV commercial which suggests that people of faith should not shop at Walmart. It uses language and imagery from the political right to attack an institution, a retailer that has often been associated with a political right, that looks like an ad, one of those church ads you see sometimes.
I mean, yeah. This is very playing on television somewhere.
Yes, it's a television ad, and you know, it's powerful stuff. It'll be interesting to see how Walmart responds to that. They may choose not to respond at all, which would probably be the best
thing. I would take the high road on that. It's like a bunch of economic mullahs, you know, going after them and demanding some kind of boycott or something.
Right.
When Walmart repeatedly broke child labor laws, is being sued by 1.5 million women for discrimination, and over 600,000 Walmart workers and their families have no company health care. Being sued by 1.5 million women for discrimination, and over 600,000 Walmart workers and their families have no company health care.
Bunch of economic mullahs.
He exploits workers and doesn't treat people well, and that's an unchristian-like way of doing business. So therefore, if you have faith, you shouldn't shop there. It's a television ad, and you know, it's powerful stuff.
I would take the high road on that. It's like a bunch of economic mullahs, you know, going after them.
When Walmart repeatedly broke child labor laws, is being sued by 1.5 million women for discrimination, and over 600,000 Walmart workers and their families have no company health care.
Do
unto others as you would have them do unto you.
There was a long-haired guy who drew a crowd outside. He got them all angry over national pride. He was talking of the war that's on our shore and how we've never had to fight so hard before. It's a war to fight and a war to win, he said. But how do we strike and where to begin? We want to kill those guilty of the crimes they've made. But they don't live in one city. There's no fortress to invade. This war is psychological, and so it starts right here. So in my defiance, I will not live in fear, because fear is their weapon. I won't give in to that. They know that fear turns to rage, and that's just the trap. The way they win is to make us strike back. They want us to launch a dreadful counterattack. The more people that die at the hand of our nation, the more hate it will breed in the next generation. And in this kind of war, they're not after our land. They want their children's blood on our vengeful hands. They want to make us act like an angry mob so we look like a bully that hates their God. Their plan is to hurt us with our own brute force, like a herd stampeding down a deadly course. If they can get us running with a rage like this, they can lead the free world off the edge of a cliff. And the cliff is to fall for the trap they've sprung, to make us play the role of the vengeful one. They want us to chase them and hunt them down, to kill their people and burn their towns. The few guilty people are happy to die if they can make us kill a few thousand more besides. because the death of the innocents just fuels the flame until the next war starts, and it's all the same, and the future unfolds for 100 years as the terror grows and breeds more fear. So who will decide the future of our nation? Will we follow along with their invitation? The invitation is to trust our hate, to let revenge define our fate, to never see that it's a different war and we can't fight the same way we fought before. We're not hunted by a tiger or a lion or a shark. It's more like fire that's the danger and the enemy is a spark. But the trickiest spin that the devil could twist was convincing the world that he didn't exist. If you don't believe in evil, then they're just dangerous men, and you fight fire with fire, and you're just like them, as an eye for an eye, time after time, eye after eye, until the whole world is blind. But if our enemy is evil, like a virus of the mind, and it's moving through the body of all humankind, then the evil brilliance of this virus, which is hate, is that our natural reaction is what makes it replicate. We want to shoot at a target that's easy to find, but the enemy is in us, all humankind. We want to kill the invader like we could in the past, but you can't kill a virus with a shotgun blast. This is not a nation that we're up against. If it is good against evil, then what's our best defense? Well, the man on the street was now drawing a crowd, and some people got angry and voices got loud. And the crowd answered back to that sidewalk guy that we must have revenge for the people that died. But the man kept talking about love and light as if that were any way to fight the fight. And a scuffle started, and they hauled him in, and he was convicted of crimes and sins. And for national safety and religious pride, that sidewalk preacher was crucified.
In the markets, I've seen you in the streets and at your political conventions, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and ma. I've just got one question and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Jesus would bomb the Syrians, 'cause they're not Jews like him. Maybe Jesus would bomb the Afghans on some kind of vengeful whim. Maybe Jesus would drive an M1 tank and he would shoot Saddam. Who would Jesus bomb? Yes, I've seen you on the TV and on the battleships. I've seen you in the house on the hill. And I've heard you talking about making the world safer and about all the men you have to kill. And you speak so glibly about your civilization and how you have the moral higher ground. While halfway around the world, your explosives smash the buildings. If you could only hear the sound. But maybe Jesus would sell landmines and turn on his electric chair. Maybe Jesus would show no compassion for his enemies in the lands way over there. Maybe Jesus would have flown the planes that killed the kids in Vietnam. Who would Jesus bomb? Yes, I hear you shout with confidence as you praise the Lord and you talk about this God you know so well. You talk of Armageddon and your final victory when all the evil forces go to hell. Well, you'd best hope you've chosen wisely on the right side of the Lord, and when you die, your conscience, it is clear. You'd best hope your atom bombs are better than the sword, and the time when your reckoning is here. Cause I don't think Jesus would send gunships into Bethlehem or jets to raise the towns of Timorees. I don't think Jesus would lend money to dictators or drive those SUVs. I don't think Jesus would ever have dropped a single ounce of napalm. Who would Jesus bomb? Who would Jesus bomb? Who would Jesus bomb?
I'm going to now skip up to the present. Basically, what happened after Operation Defensive Shield, the U.S. went to war with Iraq. And the hope was exactly the same as what happened after the first attack on Iraq in 1990. Namely, after 1991, after the war ended on February 28th, after the war ended, the expectation was the Palestinians were so desperate, so psychologically as well as materially broken, that they can get them, to at least the leadership, to play the Bantustan role. And now the hope after the second destruction of Iraq was that the Palestinians would be so, to use the expression, shocked and awed by this terrifying display of U.S. power, that now you can get them to play the role. They realized Arafat was hopeless. He just wouldn't do what was wanted of him. And so Arafat was discarded, and they came up with this other guy, Mr. Abu Mazen, who he was also had nationalist credentials. He was a founder of the PLO. And as my very dear friend Muin Rabbani said, the difference between Arafat and Abu Mazen is Arafat is corrupt, incompetent, but elected. Abu Mazen is corrupt, incompetent, but he was unelected. And the polls showed that had there been an open, a free election in Palestine, the estimate was he would get between 3 and 5% of the vote, which means for the Americans, he was a perfect democratic leader of Palestine. In any case, that didn't pan out. It didn't work. Abu Mazen quickly, became history. And now it's unclear how the Israelis will proceed. Some are hoping for a technical solution of the problem. Most of you are familiar because it's gotten fairly wide coverage in the American press. They're hoping for a technical solution, namely to enclose the Palestinians within a wall, to basically claim, and I'm not using the term, the very distinguished Israeli sociologist from the Hebrew University, Baruch Kimmerling, if you open up his new book, Politicide, on Sharon, he describes, I'm using his words, he describes Gaza as, quote, the world's largest concentration camp. And now they're trying to move the West Bank into the first rank of being the world's largest concentration camp, and they're trying to enclose it in a wall. Whether it will succeed, I can't predict. I mean, those things, nobody has the crystal ball that can tell you whether it will succeed. I have to say, I go over quite frequently there, and the last or the penultimate time I went over there, it was just when they were commencing the erection of the wall, or barrier, whatever you want to call it. And everybody was talking there about the wall, and it kind of had this kind of mystical resonance, and they all wanted me to go to Qalqilya, where, there's the huge concrete wall surrounding it. And it was a kind of odd or an eerie experience for me, because as the person who introduced you mentioned, my parents were survivors of the concentration camps, and I don't usually like to use that because I think it's an unfair card in the debate. But for this particular point, I want to mention it because when I was growing up, there were only a handful of books written on the Nazi Holocaust, practically nothing before June 1967, practically nothing written on it. But there were a couple, and there was a couple of historical novels written on the topic. And one of them came out in 1961, 62 by this guy who, I think the older people in the audience who remember, John Hersey. And I remember I was around 11, 12 years old. 1960, no, I was 9 years old. I was around 9 years old, and my mother said to me, you should read this book. And it was a book about the Warsaw Ghetto, a historical novel. And it was called, anyone remember? Yeah, it was called The Wall. And so it was a very kind of strange feeling for me that when I was there, everybody's talking about the wall, the wall. And to my thinking, for any Jew, and you know, you claim all this Holocaust consciousness, you know, for any Jew, the resonance should be very obvious. The Wall, yeah. That was Hersey's famous historical novel about the wall that was built about around the Warsaw Ghetto to herd in the Palestinians. Whether it'll succeed or not, I don't know. A lot of it, frankly, depends on us. Because I'm not Pollyannish of seeing too much of life to be, you know, terrifically hopeful for human prospects. Though I've not seen so much of life that I've become totally cynical about prospects for humanity. But I do remain fairly confident that this is a winnable struggle. The facts are not complicated. Truth is on our side. Justice is on our side. If we show a little courage, show a little integrity, show a little conscientiousness, I'm pretty confident we can win.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world,
that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
One more time, everybody. Attention, quick march, slow march, left on, right on, a button, double up, salute, put your hands, stand at ease, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready. Attention, quick march, slow march, left on, right on, a button, double up, salute, open your hands, stand at ease, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready. Hop!
Speakers have said they knew the American people wouldn't stand for it, and they said so in their documents. And they said, unless there's that new Pearl Harbor. Well, 9/11 did supply that, and we've been lied to not only about the war, but about 9/11 itself. The Bush administration was warned. They were warned by the Clinton administration during the transition period. They were warned by the intelligence agencies of 11 other nations. They were specifically warned by one FBI agent that Moussaoui was planning on flying a hijacked airliner, quote, into the World Trade Center, unquote. They ignored the warnings. More than that, we have mounting evidence that at least they made it impossible for those planes to be intercepted. If our government had merely did nothing, and I say that as an old interceptor pilot, I know the drill, I know what it takes, I know how long it takes, I know what the procedures are, I know what they were, and I know what they've changed them to. If our government had merely done nothing and allowed normal procedures to happen on that morning of 9/11, the Twin Towers would still be standing and thousands of dead Americans would still be alive. My sisters and brothers, that is treason. As a combat veteran, I will not stand idly by and watch our security destroyed by a president who went AWOL rather than serve in Vietnam. As one who's devoted his life to the security of this country, I will not stand by and watch an appointed president send our sons and daughters around the world to kill Arabs for the oil companies. Patriotism demands that I speak out and call it by its name. It is treason. I joined the Air Force a long time ago to protect our borders and our people, not the financial interests of Folgers, Chiquita Banana, Exxon, and Halliburton. We've had enough corporate wars. No more Iraqs, no more Kosovos, no more El Salvadors, no more Colombias. These are not isolated incidents of stupidity. They're part of a long, bloody history of foreign policy being conducted for the financial interests of the wealthy few. It is a new form of colonialism. All the benefits and none of the responsibilities. It violates our Constitution. It endangers our people. And it is treason. As a pilot who flew 101 combat missions in Vietnam, I swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that includes a renegade president. It's time for George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, and the whole oil mafia to be removed from office and indicted for treason. We owe it to the men and women serving in Iraq to end the occupation, restore our credibility and honor, and bring them home. And it could be done if we had a president who would go to the UN and say, we made a horrible mistake, it was wrong, and we make you three commitments. One, we give up all rights to Iraqi oil. Two, we give up all rights to the rebuilding contracts. If Halliburton wants a contract from you, they have to bid on it like everybody else. And they have to hire Iraqis to do the work for a change. Number three, we give up all rights to those 14 permanent military bases we're building in Iraq at this time. Now, the people in the White House are not going to make those commitments, so they have to go, and all the puppeteers with them. You know, we are the people and we are sovereign. We are the patriots, and the whole world is with us. Everywhere in the country that they have a free press, all over the world, people know the facts, and they are with us. Not the people out there, not the deadheads, not the know-nothings, not the chicken hawks. They're with us. Don't let anybody intimidate you into silence. It's time for all of us to speak truth to power. Our sons and daughters are being killed. They're being maimed by the tens of thousands. They're being poisoned by depleted uranium by the hundreds of thousands. Their children are being born with birth defects, horrible birth defects at an alarming rate. We're being lied to about all of that as well. Our sons and daughters in uniform are being dehumanized, emotionally damaged, psychologically destroyed. They're being made not just to kill, but to hate. Those who return are prone to domestic violence, divorce, and suicide. The lies, the killing, and the destruction of our young sons and daughters must not continue. We must end it. Patriotism demands that we speak truth to power, and that we support what's left of our troops by bringing them home now. Together we can do it. We can get the truth out there to the American people. We're on the verge. We've got half the people with us. We've got to go after the other half. And together, we can take back our country and get the liars the heck out of there. God bless America, and God grant us regime change in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production for nonprofit use.
Like beer? Like pirate radio? Then we've got an event for you. Come on over to Sparky's Pub this Saturday, December 17th, starting around 9 o'clock for the 106.9 FM Benefit Beer Blast. Come out and drink a beer to support pirate radio at Sparky's Pub, 1521 30th Street.
That's
this Saturday, December 17th.
Test, starting around
9 o'clock. Libations and fun time.
Test, blah, 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 blah.
Here, you can see that there's a lumming error on the data.